Welcome to Outbeat Radio, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight, we have Suzanne Sherman and Shannon Rose together for 17 years. Suzanne is a writer, a writing coach, a memoir teacher for over 20 years, and now gives writing workshops on Zoom. She's lived in Sonoma County since 1996 and lives in a house that her partner Shannon built. Welcome, Suzanne.
Thank you. So happy to be here with you.
Shannon Rose has been committed to creating women's spaces since she was 18. She's a tradeswoman focused on remodeling, designing, and building small houses. She has lived in California since 1999 and lives in the house that she built. She's happy being a women's innkeeper and steward of the land. Welcome, Shannon.
Thank you for having us.
Stay tuned to learn more about Suzanne and Shannon. But first, here's news and events from our Outbeat member and our engineer, Greg Moraldia.
This is Greg Moraldia with your Outbeat Radio News for the week of August 1st, 2021. After earning the adoration of the world at four straight Olympic Games, decorated champion diver Tom Daley of Great Britain has finally collected Olympic gold. He and his diving partner Matty Lee won the 10-meter synchronized platform diving competition last Monday morning in Tokyo. The 27-year-old Daley has represented the UK at the Olympics since 2008 when he was just 14 years old. Daley already had six world champion medals, including three gold, eight European champion medals, including five gold, four Commonwealth Games gold medals, and one silver. He also won three Olympic bronze medals, but until now, the gold has eluded him. Daley and Lee beat China with a score of 471.81 to 470.58. This is the first time since 2000 that China has not taken home the gold in this event. Daley and Lee hugged right after learning their final placement, with Daley saying, quote, "Oh my God." And here in the U.S., the Biden administration is directing insurance companies to offer PrEP without copays or deductibles. PrEP, or pre-exposure prophylaxis, refers to two antiviral medications under the brand name of Truvada, which was approved by the Food and Drug Administration in 2012. A second drug named Descovy was approved in 2019. Both drugs can prevent an HIV-negative person from becoming HIV-positive. According to guidance released last week by the United States Labor, Health, and Human Services and Treasury, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act requires insurance companies to provide evidence-based services with an A or B rating from the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force without cost-sharing requirements in most situations. PrEP received an A grade from the task force in 2019 as an effective antiviral therapy to persons who are at a high risk for HIV. The cost of PrEP has created barriers to getting it into the communities that need it most. Truvada typically costs between $1,600 and $1,800 per month per person. Insurance companies will have 60 days to comply with the new regulations. And in Idaho, an administrator at a public college has come under fire for anti-LGBT statements he made as a church pastor, but the school is sticking up for him, saying he's never brought his hatred for LGBT people to work. Logan Fowler, who's the director of marketing and communications at Lewis Clark State College, is also the pastor at Truth Baptist Church. In one sermon, he said that pride is actually about pedophilia and that the LGBTQ agenda is coming for your children. This was all recorded on video. He also described gay men and lesbians as being vile and complained about transgender athletes. He said, quote, "Our world hates God, hates Christians, and hates the Bible," end quote. College president Cynthia Pemberton said that the college couldn't do anything about Fowler and his comments because those comments were not made at the college, and the college respects his First Amendment rights. Fowler told the Lewiston Tribune that his, quote, "impeccable 15-year track record verifies his ability to be respectful in the workplace," end quote. He added, quote, "I'm a Christian who believes the Bible is true. I believe sin is real, and so is the Savior Jesus Christ. I will not be bullied into relinquishing my First Amendment rights to practice my religion and exercise free speech as a private citizen and as a pastor in my place of worship." End quote. And in what some might call an act of karma, the granddaughter of arch anti-LGBTQ activist Anita Bryant is getting married to another woman, and she doesn't know whether to invite her homophobic grandmother to the wedding. Bryant's granddaughter Sarah Green said that her grandmother refused to even believe that she's gay after she came out on her 21st birthday. Bryant is now 81 years old and says she is continuing to pray for Green to find a husband. You might remember that Anita Bryant won the 1958 Miss Oklahoma pageant and was the brand ambassador for Florida Citrus, but she's best known for mounting the infamous Save Our Children campaign of the 1970s to repeal an ordinance in Dade County, Florida that banned discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. Bryant focused on gay teachers, saying that gay people are child molesters who go into teaching to hurt children. And here locally, Napa Valley College announced registration is now open for the fall Introduction to LGBT Studies class that begins on Tuesday, August 17th. The class will meet entirely online and is the entry-level course for the LGBT Studies certificate. There are no prerequisites, and everyone is welcome to register. You can learn more at napavalley.edu. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia.
And if you just joined us, this is Living Proof with Diana and Sheridan. As our guests tonight, we have Shannon Rose and Suzanne Sherman together for 17 years. Again, thank you for taking your time out of your busy schedules to join us tonight. Suzanne, we'd like you to tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do for work, what your passions are, your hobbies, stuff like that. Let us get to know you.
Okay, well, thank you. I would say, first off, I'm a writer. I've been a writer for most of my life, and I'm just over 60 now. I started journaling. I've been journaling for 50 years. I've published poetry. I've studied screenwriting and playwriting. I've been a script editor. I've been a memoir teacher for the last just over 20 years now. And I teach writing workshops on Zoom. I'm also a writing coach, book consultant, and editor, and I've been an editor for over 30 years. So everything I do in my career world is related to writing. In my passion world, it overlaps, thankfully. And also some of my pleasures and passions include music, dance, visiting the beach and the woods, watercolor painting. I've been studying piano for over 3 years now, and I'm learning songwriting, and I'm reconnecting with my guitar lately. So having a good time with all of that.
So something you said made my mind go, oh, you said something like this. You said, that's my career and my work, but thankfully it overlaps with my passion. So can you say a little bit more about how it overlaps? And you said thankfully, so can you tell us why?
Well, you know, when I was a creative writing major in college, and when I left school in 1982, when I graduated, I thought I would go into book publishing. And I really didn't know exactly what that meant, but I had been a writing major, so I assumed I would somehow be involved as a writer, and I didn't trust that I could make a living as a writer, so I became an editor. And for many years, I worked as an editor, you know, for different types of places, book publishers, magazines, stuff like that. It wasn't fulfilling for me, and the environment was less than that. Sort of like the last straw, you could say, maybe, was when I lived in Oakland. I worked in San Francisco downtown, and I literally read a book the entire way from home to my office, including going up the elevator. But I was just a walking zombie. When I left there and went out on my own and became a freelancer in 1996, which is the same year I moved to Sonoma County from the Bay Area, I made it a point to discover and find and stay with work that feeds my soul.
So how does that enter into your life when you're not working?
When I'm not working, I would say that it simply gives me a continuing sense of feeling like I'm living my right livelihood. And that is a good feeling, that I make my living helping other people write books, usually memoir. That is the area I've chosen to focus on. And in my own life, I still do grapple with getting time for myself to get my own writing done and my own books written. And that's not always easy to do. But I would say that really how it makes a big difference is that because I work for myself, I'm self-employed, because I am my own employer, I can periodically check in with myself and say, how is this working for me? What's working and what isn't working? If there's something, an area, if there's something I've gotten involved in, I spent so many years saying yes to whatever I could do just because I could do it. Oh, I know how to do that. I'll do that. That I want to make it a conscious decision. Is this feeding me? Is this working for me? Is this using my talents and skills the best way I want it to? And I can make some adjustments. So I would say that's how it's affecting me.
That's beautiful. It's clearly you love to write because your whole, everything is about your writing in your life. And that's a beautiful thing. And Shannon, so tell us a little bit more about you.
I was going to say retired builder, but I actually am kind of retired because things are always coming up. Like I'm skilled in carpentry and plumbing. And because I own this piece of land with three houses, I end up doing a lot of the maintenance myself, which ends up being very good as far as cost efficient to be able to do a lot of it myself. Or if I have to hire out, I can watch things. I know exactly what needs to be done. So it really helps me around taking care of the land and also doing the groundskeeping and the maintenance, which I really like to do, and getting more into gardening, which I have never really been a gardener, but I end up having this really beautiful garden. So I've been working on it because it started out being women that lived here before were gardeners, and they made this beautiful garden and they left. And so I had this garden, and here I don't garden, but I just started getting into it. You know, I complain a little bit about it, but it's mostly fun.
Beautiful. That you still get to put your hands in it and
yeah, and I'm a very hands-on person. Yeah.
So where did it all start for you becoming a builder?
Well, when I was 25, I was living in Seattle and I was about to go to carpentry school in Seattle, and I'd be the only woman, and I got accepted to this program. And then right before that, it was this in the summer, this woman I met at this women's group, we hit it off really nicely. And she was asking me about myself. And she said, well, I'm thinking about moving to get in a place right next to this women's land. And I'm going to build them a cabin. If you want to learn carpentry, I'll teach you all I know. So my choice was living in the city and learning carpentry from this guy, being the only woman in the class, or going to the country, learning one-on-one, hands-on with women. I mean, you know, it wasn't a hard decision.
No-brainer.
Yeah, it was a no-brainer. So I did that. I said, I just need, because she was in the process of buying this land right next door to Women's Share, which is this women's land. And she called me and said that she got the land. And was I serious? And I said, yeah, I'll quit my job, give my notice, and come up. So I did that, and we got right into building a hexagon cabin on Women's Share. And that was my first experience in learning how to build. And then it evolved further into, she lived in the city in San Francisco half the time, and we lived in the country in Southern Oregon half the time. And so we would work on old Victorians in San Francisco, either remodeling or doing the plumbing or doing the electrical, whatever needed to be done. And we just were kind of learning as we were going. She knew more than I did, but we started getting at the same level when we got deeper into doing plumbing and electrical and stuff like that. Right. And I just picked it up naturally. It was really easy for me.
Sounds like you knew that's what you wanted to do for a while before doing it.
I did. I mean, I felt like for a while I was kind of lost in what I wanted to do, because I You know, I was a hippie and I just traveled from festival to festival and I just kind of didn't really have a passion. And I moved to Seattle because I wanted to come out. I wanted to be around women. I felt like I'd have more freedom not being around my family, because at that time, that was 1970, I didn't want to embarrass them. You know, so I wanted to just be freer about who I was. I could go into that about being gay if you want me to do that.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about, yeah, you're right here as you're coming out. So, yeah.
I transitioned from feeling like around age 9, being a sick homosexual and having it be secret. When I figured out about sexuality, you know, I mean, I would have experiences like when I lived in Michigan, my bedroom window, I could see the drive-in theater. So I could see the screen. We couldn't hear it, but we could see it. So I would have my girlfriends over and we'd play out the scenes. And I always wanted to be Tony Curtis and not Natalie Wood, or Rock Hudson and not Doris Day, you know, things like that. So we'd kiss and we'd do these things. And I really liked it. And so from there, I kind of knew that, you know, I really did like girls. But what I was aware of is that it was sick. And so I had in my little kid mind that I had this little book bank, and it was the shape of a book, but it was a little bank, and I'd save my money whenever I could. I had allowance or, you know, babysitting or stuff like that. Early on, it was before I was old enough to babysit, but I would save my money. And in my mind, I had that if I saved $25, I could go to a psychiatrist and get cured. So this is kind of what I was doing when I was a little kid.
Shannon, how did you know that it was sick? Where did you pick this up?
Well, you know, I think you pick it up in school, you pick it up in church. I was raised Catholic. I never even heard the word lesbians, but I knew. I come from the Midwest. There was never anything positive about it. And you knew that when you got together, like if you had a boyfriend or girlfriend, it wasn't you have two girlfriends that are dating, or two boyfriends, you know, so you get the messages, but that's not a good thing to do. And then in about 1970, I was leaving Key West, Florida, and I was hiding my sexuality the whole time and not exploring it at all, just in my mind. And then a friend of mine, as we were driving up from Key West to Michigan, because I was going to my brother's wedding, when I was in the car, they said, "Have you ever heard of gay liberation?" And I said, "Oh, what is that?" And then they explained to me what gay liberation was. And I thought, that's me. That is who I am. And so it went from feeling like I was hiding and being a sick homosexual, coming out and going, "I'm a proud lesbian." And then from there, I went to Seattle and started the process of just that's how I identified.
Wow. Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
And just one more question. How old were you when you were in the car?
21.
And the person who asked you this question, I don't know. I'm just like, I just think it's so cool. That person must have felt something from you to ask you that question, right?
I think she did. And one of the things is she was attracted to me. I think she could see something going on there. But I wasn't really attracted to her in that way. I liked her very much, but there were three of us. One liked one, the other one liked the other, and the other one liked the other.
That's the 70s, right? Wow. Well, thank you so much for sharing that, Shannon. Okay, Suzanne, what about your coming out?
Well, it's a completely different experience. Shannon is 10 years older than me, so we come from different generations. For one, she's describing being a child in the 50s in the Midwest. I was a child in the 60s in LA. So I was a young teenager in the early 70s in LA. And I just think of that with the context of it because my reality was affected by where I lived also. And my reality was not even I mean, I didn't even think about being gay or not gay or any. It was just really pretty free flowing, kind of. It was kind of the 1970s. Bisexuality was in my consciousness. And I went to a creative arts high school, private school. And at that school, there were lesbians that I hadn't known were lesbians. They were my friends. And when we all were dancing to a Patti Smith song, Gloria, they decided I was really cool and befriended me. And so in 1974, one of them invited me out to a women's bar in downtown LA. And I happily went with her. I was 14. I had no idea really anything about it. I was just like thrilled. She had a car. She was older than me. Yay, we're going out. I went into that women's bar and I had never seen women together before. I had never, even though there was a small group of lesbians at my small school and I was friends with them, they weren't physical with each other. I had no idea seeing women together. So that was my first experience with being in sort of a same-sex environment. And I was nervous, and it's a really fun story. I went into this bar, and the girl who took me to that bar that night had loaned me a Chris Williamson album that had come out not long before, because this is 1974, and the album was Changer and the Changed. I listened to it constantly. I loved it. And for some reason, it never, even though I sang along and I danced in my bedroom and all that, I had no idea really what it, I was seeing. Like, I had no idea. Well, this is like a women, loving women. I just, waterfall spilling out, you know, filling up, spill all that. I loved it. So I was in this bar, and as soon as we walked in, there's a Chris Williamson song playing. It's like, oh, wow, I know that song. Wow. And women are dancing together, embracing and making out, and all this stuff is going on. And I was so shaky. As soon as we sat down at our table, and we're sitting at a table with a girl from high school that I hadn't known was lesbian. And so I'm like, whoa, my mind was spinning. And as soon as the beer came to the table, my friend brought a beer for me to the table, I just immediately reached out and knocked it over. So I had to, by mistake, so then I had to run to the bar, try to get a towel. Now I'm smashed in a crowd with all these women making out and doing things. When I got the towel and I turn around, I'm face to face with a girl that I recognize from grammar school, which when you're 14 is not really that long ago. And I blurt out her name the way I had used to know it. Oh my God, name. And she cocks her head and says, my name's Frank. And I almost faint right there. And I rush to my table and I'm about to tell them at the table what just happened. And who comes over but Frank comes sauntering over, kisses the girl that I know from high school who I did not know would be there. I'm in this drama. They were seeing each other. Okay, that was a big sort of eye-opening experience for me. But when I went home, I went back to my life as I knew it. It's not like I changed anything, but that was a little bit, that's an extreme of it. But still, my mind was open to variety, let's say. I wrote in a diary when I was about 15, I was saying, you know, I'm bisexual. I think everyone is bisexual and we're all being trained along a certain direction. That was my view. And at 16, I fell in love with a guy that I met, and it wasn't the direction I had expected to go in. And I was with him till I was 25. So that's the early days of my experience. I still thought I was bisexual. We had an open relationship, he and I, and I had some variety in my life, let's say. And I a fit more, I would say, for me coming out at 25, I think of it more as coming into it. Not about like coming out. It's like I came into living the life that was a part of me that I hadn't lived yet. I had been in a relationship with a man. We had met right before 12th grade and we were together all the way through college because he came with me. And so it was a new experience for me to say, I think I really want to live this part of myself and find out what it is. So when I, quote, came out, I really didn't know what direction I'd be going in. I did not know any lesbians. I did not know anyone living bisexuality. I was in my own little world that way. So I started exploring lesbian life by going dancing at women's dance clubs in San Francisco. And this all was in San Francisco in 1985. And it went on from there.
Wow. I love that story about Frank.
You just never know, right? You're just kids in elementary school. And then all of a sudden, you grow up and things change. And so, Suzanne, do you still own the label as bisexual? I want to understand where you are at. Or you don't label or?
No, I would say since that time, I have only been involved with women. I've been in long relationships. I mean, the shortest was probably 5 years. So, I've been in probably 4 different relationships with women, including Shannon, and Shannon being the longest and happiest relationship of them. I have not identified as bisexual in the sense that I have felt that I could either be with a man or be with a woman. That really doesn't fit into my life, but I still hesitate to say anything different because I know that that also is a part of my sexuality. It's just an honest way for me to understand it. I don't lead with it as an identifier, no. And I've been involved in lesbian life for so long, and most of my friends are lesbians, and it's the world that I live in and that I love.
Well, thank you so much for both of you for your stories, your coming out stories. It is time for us to break with music, and I know you brought a song along, and Shannon, would you tell us about a little bit about the song?
I really love the song Songbird by Eva Cassidy, and I just felt it was a very heartful song. And Suzanne was coming over. She was going to take a bath because at her house, their water wasn't bath worthy. It had kind of sulfur. And I have this really nice clawfoot tub. Now, we were just friends then. We weren't, lovers. And anyway, so I drew her a bath and I made it really nice, candlelight and everything. And so she's getting in and I put the song on, Songbird. And she just melted into the bathtub with it. And I was very attracted to her, but I had never told her because she was in a relationship with somebody else. So I always really kept it clean. I never let on. And so anyway, you could continue.
Well, that's really the story, except from my perspective, just to say, why did I go take a bath at Shannon's? I've had to try to remember that. Why was I taking a bath at your house? I lived with someone who I was in a long-term relationship with, but we had softened water. Our water was like slippery, yucky. And Shannon was a new friend. We remained friends for 3 years after that, actually. But I went to her house for the bathtub. And when I got into that bath, at the time that song came on, at the same moment, I just had this resounding feeling of, wow, this is where I belong. This is the life that I belong in. This is my life. And it was a strange feeling to have, considering that I was having a life in a different home in another part of town. We did not get together right after that, but that was an experience that stayed with me and will always stay with me.
Oh, no wonder this song means so much to both of you. All right, everyone, take a listen. This is Songbird by Eva Cassidy. Enjoy.
For you,
Welcome back. This is Living Proof with Diana and Sheridan. You were just listening to Songbird by Eva Cassidy. And Shannon and Suzanne, our guests, told us a lovely story on how that song came to be in their lives. So, Suzanne, we'd like to start with you and ask you, well, after you got into the bathtub and you said, this is my life, this is where I want to be. And then you said, it didn't happen right away. Tell us how did it happen that you and Shannon got together and you fell in love with each other and all that?
Okay. I lived my relationship that I was in at that time. I sort of lived it like many people do, longer than I should have in that case. And I will also say that we three were friends. My partner at that time and Shannon, we were all friends together, and we had a great time together. And then we had a slightly larger group of friends that we all were friends together. So that was that setting. I wasn't looking over my shoulder at all, but I was aware that I was just aware of Shannon being, you know, I liked her. I loved her. She was a dear friend of mine, but I was committed in the relationship I was in and trying to continue to make that work. When that relationship did end, which was an ending that my partner chose to make. And it was a good choice, but it was her choice. And then what happened was sort of like I was pushed off a cliff and Shannon was standing there holding a cloud for me to land on. And literally, it was only a couple of weeks later, literally, that I needed a place to live. And Shannon invited me to come and stay in her loft and just stay there while I looked for a place. And it was just right away, pretty much, that I knew it's not necessarily good to go directly from one relationship to another. But also in my heart, that prior relationship had been over for a long time. I was not being spiritually or emotionally fed by it. So we had kind of a bit of an emotionally tumultuous beginning, Shannon and I, because of the ending I was simultaneously going through, and the fact that we owned a home in another state together and stuff like that. But Shannon persevered and we stayed steady and grew stronger and adored each other. And it just was going strong for us together from the start. And I just knew this is how I want to feel. It was the same thing really as slipping into that bathtub. It was like, yeah, I have so much spaciousness in this relationship with her. I'm so honored and I'm so respected and I respect and honor her and it's so mutual. And I just started being able to express and live more parts of myself than I had ever been able to do before. And I really was thriving. So the relationship that had split up for me was almost 10 years long. And we had bought a house out of the state and we had just moved in it. So there were pretty disturbing things about the situation that I suddenly found myself back in Sonoma County again, not the direction I thought I was headed in. And the friend that I was staying with lived near Shannon and wanted to have some time to invite family over for the holidays. So asked Shannon if I could stay at her place. So the way we kind of made that transition from friendship into something more than that was that Shannon had me staying at the house now with her. And I asked her if she would stay with me that evening and hold me. Now, I, being from LA, certainly wasn't thinking of the words hold me as all I necessarily wanted at that point with her, but I thought that'd be a good place to start. And also, I emotionally did want to have her hold me, and I just felt open to what could happen with Shannon and see. So I told her I was feeling attracted to her and that I had been, and I wasn't sure if we could move in that direction, but I wanted to let her know how I was feeling. And she told me it would be best right now for her to just hold me. And she'd hold me till I fell asleep. So we did that. And in the morning, sure enough, she was gone when I woke up. I went downstairs, sat with my little suitcase, waiting for her to wake up so she could drive me back to the friend's house. And I felt terrible, like, oh my God, I told her how I feel. Oh no, I just maybe ruined our friendship and I need this friendship right now. What a mistake I just made telling her I was attracted to her. Oh, and the next thing I know, she came out of her bedroom and she didn't even say a word. She just put her hand out for mine. I put my hand in hers and followed her into the bedroom where we then hugged and kissed.
Oh, that's so beautiful. It feels like you were there for each other in that moment. Like you both needed that, you know?
Yeah.
It was a really special opening to this other part. I never understood how friends could become lovers. I had heard about it and I didn't believe in it for myself. It just did not seem possible to me. And with lesbians, you know, there can be fuzzy lines between those two places. It can seem like, I know you, you're my sister, you're in my heart. But how does that change and become romantic with a spark? And all I know is I experienced it with Shannon, and there was a lot of spark, and there had not been spark there before. There had just been genuine love, care, interest, and I was still learning her. I was still discovering her. Like, you know, I'm cerebral in a way. I'm in my mind. And I found that she also is very, we could have great conversations, deep conversations, discuss lots of things. And I got to know her better and better, and only loved her more and more. And I would say when we were dancing and I felt her rhythm, I knew that was another moment of, this is it. Like, this is it. This woman and I are in step together.
You know, one thing I wanted to say about our differences that we come with is that for me, when starting being sexual is a real big commitment, because I don't easily have affairs. I have had affairs, but it's not really something that I've really, really liked. I'm a relationship person. So when I wanted to sort of think about it, a new way of being with Suzanne, I needed to think about it because I knew that this was going to be a relationship. It wasn't going to be just an affair, where I think maybe Suzanne might have been coming from the place of, oh, we can have an affair. So that's part of why I really wanted to step back and think, is this what we're going to be doing? And then I decided, yeah, that's what I want to do.
Wow. Beautiful. How the journey. And so I'm thinking about the friendship piece, Suzanne. So what do you say to it now? How are your feelings after the fact around friendship? And how does that make a good companionship with a lover? What would you say about that now, looking back?
I would say that all I know is Shannon's my best friend. She is one of my favorite people in the world. She is just about my favorite person in the world. Sometimes I think to myself, and this happens pretty frequently, wow, I'm having such a good time. I just have to remind myself, well, yeah, we're friends. Of course I'm having such a good time with her. It's almost like I'm surprised. Wow, I'm having such a good time with her. The transition really was seamless from friendship into lovers and into partners. And I'm just grateful for having the grounding foundation that we had of already knowing each other for a few years and then only getting to know each other better and better. And there were no surprises. There were just things about her that I had not known, like I said before. I knew we could have deep conversations about things that interested us both, but I didn't really know she was a reader. And there were just some things that I came to know, that the way you just come to know them, that was more intimacy. And I discovered that intimacy was something that I really am comfortable with when I'm with the right person.
You know, most of my long-term intimate lover relationships have been being friends first, you know, 3 years. When I think of a few of my other lovers, we were friends first for, you know, 2 or 3 years before we started being lovers. And that is my comfort zone, to share sexually in all different levels of intimacy. I need the comfort of knowing somebody before I go the next step. So for me, it was a natural progression to be lovers with my good friend, because before I'm lovers with anybody, I am good friends.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. So Shannon, we heard some of the reasons or some of the qualities that Suzanne, what made her attracted to you. So Shannon, can you share a few things that attracted you to Suzanne?
Well, other than her being totally gorgeous, I would say that, you know, when we danced together, we had a rhythm that really just meshed well together. And I enjoyed that a lot. And she wouldn't dance with me when we were friends. I could tell that she kind of stayed away from that. I never really understood why. You know, I love her mind. You know, I love how we can talk about things. And I feel like we both communicate really well together. And one thing I really like about Suzanne, that she doesn't hold grudges. You know, she gets over things really easy. Like when we have a fight, it's like rant, 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 and then it's over. It doesn't like linger. And that I'm like that and she's like that. And we just kind of move on really quickly.
Wow. You're sharing your relationship with the listeners, and that's so wonderful that they get to hear your story.
I also wanted to say, the reason I decided to do this is because I really see the importance of lesbians sharing their life together, sharing your experiences, because a lot of people don't even know those experiences. So I think it's really, really important. And I know that when I lived at WomanShare in this women's community for 20 years, how important it was. Things that I would just think were just natural things were like eye openers to women that would come and visit and had no idea what women could do together. You know, I see what you're doing as a big part of empowering women, empowering people to speak their truths.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you so much. So before we end here, we want to go into your support system, because I know that's important to you, and we always like to, you know, hear about your stories, people sharing their support system, because some people don't have them and some people do have support. So when you were coming out, and you know, who are your support system, who did you go to? And then also, who did you go to? I mean, like family now in your relationship for 17 years, did you have support of your friends and your family? So Shannon, I want you to start.
When I first came out, I had a support system in Seattle right away. Right when I moved there, at first we lived in a house of 17 people and they were trying to do political stuff. It was kind of in that coming together like that, but I really didn't like living with men. I mean, it was about 2 weeks and I was like over it. So I wanted to get together a women's house. And this was before I actually had been with a woman, but I was being a lesbian. I mean, identifying as one. And I just felt a lot of support. Some of the women were coming out, some of them weren't. And then when I got together with somebody, I never felt with the community of women in Seattle that it was not okay. It just was right away. And there was this bar in Seattle that started, was called the Crescent. And it was this, these two lesbians that started this like neighborhood bar. And we'd go there and play pool. And I just felt a lot of support and I'd meet different lesbians. And then 4 years later, I lived into a lesbian community. So I had lots and lots of support. But right when I was in Seattle, I was very close to my mother and father, but particularly my mother. And I wrote her a letter coming out and she cried and cried for a couple weeks. And she said, Dad's been asking me why I'm crying and I just can't tell him. And so I wrote him a letter and came out to him. And my mom said, well, we cried together for a couple more weeks. But my mother never like said, I don't want to see you. I don't want to, you know, anything like that. I never got felt rejected. And my mother and father were having a wedding anniversary. And I said, well, I'm going to bring my partner at the time. And my mom said, no, I don't think I want you to do that. Please, no, don't bring her. And I said, okay, all right, well, then I'm not going to be coming. Thank you for inviting me. And my mother called back and said, no, we really, really want you here. Bring your partner. And my parents really showed up for me because here it is. It's their big night, their big wedding anniversary party. And they have this long table, and then the table was facing the guest. And it was like my mother and my father. I was seated next to my mother, and my brothers were seated next to my father. And then across the table were their spouses, and they put my partner at the time across from me. So it wasn't like, well, you can take your partner, but hide her somewhere. Or don't mention that you're a lesbian or anything. Like they didn't have rules like that for me. It's like, okay, this is who you are. And it was interesting because me and my partner at the time, we were taking two-step lessons. And so we got into really good dancing. And my parents are good dancers. And they had country western music on for entertainment. And so Shoshana and I, we were dancing and I was the lead and she was a follower. And I kept having a lot of my mother's friends asking me to dance and the guys asking Shoshana to dance. And so it was like a really embracing time.
Suzanne, what about you and support in your family?
Well, that's support in my family. Can you be a little more specific?
Shannon just told us a big long story about her family and support. So did you have support when you were coming out? And do you have support now?
When I was 25, when I came out, my mother had already passed away and I had a stepmother and my father. I would say that my father seemed to want to be there for me, but he didn't really know what to do with that information and know what to do with it. It was a mixed bag, put it that way. I mean, on one hand, when I first came out to her, she was saying, do you have a gender identity problem? Because I had forgotten to bring makeup on this weekend that we went away for. And then before I knew it, about 3 years later, I had a very butch lover at the time who they invited both of us to come stay at their home. And the two of them are my stepmother and my lover were joking around in the kitchen and playing with, you know, they were just playing and joking around. But as far as support for me, I wrote a book on gay and lesbian marriage that was published in 1992. And my family, when that book came out, I felt like there was support for my having published the book, written that book. And that was definitely on their part needing to embrace the topic of same sex. And they were supportive, but I hesitate to say they were super supportive. We didn't have really a lot of experiences together that made it obvious to me that they really supported my life in that way. My father has since passed away, so I'm kind of speaking in the past tense too. My brother and sister definitely are absolutely supportive. My sister gave me the best response. I liked her response the best. When I came out to her, she is the one of all my family who I thought would be the most uncomfortable with it. And she surprised me by saying so honestly, and she just said, you know, I've never known anybody gay before. I've never known any lesbians. I've never even seen women together. She said, so I'm probably going to be really uncomfortable for a while if I see you with somebody, but then I'll get used to it. And I was like, wow, she said that? Wow. So whereas, you know, I think my brother was who I was and then good friends with and am still, I had expected more from my brother, but it turned out he was very uncomfortable with it, actually. Maybe it was a little too untraditional for his liking, but totally different now. I mean, 100%. I mean, I am me and they love me.
Could we just talk real quick about your decisions to live in different homes on the same land? Because that's very,
it is unusual.
Unusual. Yeah, that's a great word.
I could just start off by saying that I've always lived, you know, either had my own room or my own cabin. Like I had come from having my own cabin at Womanshire for 20 years. So it was like a main house. And then we each had our own cabins. And I really liked that. And I know that I come from a mother who was very, very particular about cleanliness and everything had to be a certain way. And I brought in some of that in my personality. And so I just think that I'm able to share more of myself and who I am if I have my own place. And the other thing is I had the skills to build a new home and the land to build a new home on. So I was able to do it. For me, if you can have the best of the world you want and you're able to do it, why not?
And Suzanne, from your perspective, how is that living alone, living apart?
Well, I call it living separately together. And that really is how it is. And I would say that at the beginning of our relationship, it was hard for me to imagine I'm never going to live with Shannon. I mean, that's never going to happen. As I said before, I'd been in several relationships and I always lived with my partner. It was a given. This is what you do. And in many of those cases, when I lived with a partner, I had my own bedroom and she had hers. That was usual because we liked having our own space inside the home. So there was actually some of that already inside me. But to think I would never live with Shannon was hard for me. And it was about 5 years into our relationship when she decided to build a house on her property for me to live in and to rent. It's just been a joy for me. I've lived here now for more than 10 years and we have dinner together almost every night. We sleep together usually about reps out to about probably 4 nights a week. And we don't have plans. There's not like a certain day of the week that we do this or that, but we both are very similar in that we like to be pretty spontaneous. But that's how it falls out. And we're in touch throughout the day, every day, and always have been.
That's fantastic. We are at the end of our show and we really want to thank you so much, Suzanne and Shannon, for sharing your lives with us. And we were wondering, Suzanne, would you start? We were wondering if you had any words of wisdom that you could leave us with.
I would say that my words of wisdom would be that it's important to remember you don't have to share an interest to share your pleasure in your partner's happiness about their interests. To respect and honor your partner's interests, even when those are different from your own. Shannon and I are very different in so many ways. And for example, she had a new power tool recently. Ask her to show it to me. Ask her, that was so exciting to her. I took an art class recently. She was happy to see a painting that I made. So, just because you don't share an interest doesn't mean that you cannot show your partner that you're excited for them about their pleasure.
Ah, very well said. Thank you.
Thank you.
Shannon, words of wisdom, do you have any to leave us with?
Well, I would say that it's important to take alone time to nourish yourself and to recharge. So when you come to the relationship, you come from a place of wholeness and you have more to offer. And I would say if you share a home, keep your own space if you can. And if you can't have your own room, at least have a little corner that's yours to keep in touch with yourself and to remember what moves you. I think it's really important to take that time. So when you come into the relationship, you're recharged. And so you can, bring your whole self there.
Wow. Thank you so much, both of you. Suzanne, I just wanted to invite you, if you want, to share your website so people can see what you're up to around your writing and creativity.
Thank you, Diana. My website is suzannesherman.com, and on it I describe the various kinds of offerings and services that I have for people with book consultations, editing, Zoom memoir classes, and more.
SuzanneSherman.com. Thank you so much for that website. And thank you both again for coming on to the show and sharing your lives with us so wonderfully.
Thank you for having us.
Yes. We want everyone to remember that, like Suzanne and Shannon, you too can be living proof that through sharing your craft and your experience and your wisdom, you can make our world a better world. This is Diana and Sheridan, and we will be back next month. Until then,
good night.
I step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my way. Can't stop me now. And you can do the same. Yeah. What have you done today to make you feel proud? It's never.
Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM comes from listeners and from Rocky, the free-range chicken, and Rosie, the original organic chicken. Air-chilled, non-GMO, locally raised right here in Sonoma County, with no antibiotics ever. More information is available at rockyandrosie.com. You're listening to 104.9 KRCB-FM Roanoke Park and KRCG-FM Windsor, Sonoma County's NPR station. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. Beale Street Caravan is next.